Welcome to episode 36 of VAUFB Stuttgart Americana, an American-based English language VAUFB Stuttgart fan podcast where our views are unofficial, uninformed, and usually unprepared. Austin is joining us today. I just listened to myself back and I sound incredibly sad as I'm doing that introduction. I should probably redo that to make it sound somewhat inviting for anybody who is attempting to listen to this. But here we are with episode 36. Austin is back two episodes in a row. You can reach him at OzSwert or at @U_SCF_society or hashtag terrible person, awful brother. We're never invited back on the show. That's a big hashtag. Austin, how are you doing today?
Well, you know, funny enough, that's the where I get the most contact is from that hashtag. I'm doing fantastic based on results.
Nobody wants to hear it.
Oh, I said I am doing fantastic. I'm doing well. As we record, my Italian team is down 4-0 at halftime. So if that makes you feel any better.
It does, actually. Anything that can bring you pain is making me feel good. The German phrase Schadenfreude, where you take pleasure in somebody else's misery, is fantastic. So yeah, Austin, I lost a kit to you. Our wager for last week was that on the Stuttgart versus Freiburg match, that the loser would have to provide the winner with a kit. So Austin, start figuring out if you want a Stuttgart kit, a Freiburg kit. Between what I owe you and what I owe Jeff, I'm losing money left and right. So take it easy on me here. All right. Let's start off with part one. So we got Freiburg versus Stuttgart. Stuttgart was heading towards Freiburg. This is match day 20 to try to avenge the match day 3 loss. They lost 2-3 at home, but it was a great game. It was 2-3 at the end of the first half, and it was back and forth. But the funny thing is, Oz, is three of the guys who started for Stuttgart are gone. Philip Clement, Al Gudui, and Mark Oliver Kempf has been banished to, I don't know where he's at. So the last few matches have been kind of equal between these two, but Stuttgart has definitely been under the gun against Freiburg. They've had the advantage, but Freiburg was coming off a blowout versus Dortmund, and then a midweek match versus Hoffenheim where they had that huge win in the Pokal. Mm-hmm. So I was kind of hoping that Freiburg would be a little bit spent, a little bit tired going into this one. And I was pretty optimistic heading into this one. How are you thinking going into this one?
I was a little worried, to be honest. You know, again, as you said, they just played Hoffenheim, and, you know, coming off a high like that, you would expect some faltering after that. No, this was a game, as we talked about last week, you know, I thought this was the game Stuttgart was going to put it all together, and that really worried me. So I was not very optimistic going into this game at all.
Yeah, there was most of the Stuttgart fans that I've talked to or supporters I've talked to were pretty optimistic going into this, and that kind of goes into the lineup that was put out on the pitch. And this was essentially the dream lineup for most Stuttgart supporters in terms of who was out there. Everybody who you wanted to be out there was there pretty much except for Silas. And he's working his way back from injury and from COVID. So we knew we were going to see him. So we were actually pretty optimistic going into this one, because you're like, all right, we got Sosa back. We got Dino back. We've got Furich back. We've got Kalajic back.
So I have a question about the lineup. Koulibaly started. Do you know the reasons for that?
Yeah, so I don't know if it was a like-for-like trade, so to speak, but Philip Forrester had a cold, so he was unable to play. Was one of the guys who really hasn't played that well the last couple of weeks, and Monterazzo has been much more critical openly in the public about how some of the guys have played, and he was one of the guys who was lost time. So from the outside looking in, it looks like he's one of the guys who is kind of being reprimanded for his play a little bit, but from all accounts he didn't play this week because he was sick. And so Koulibaly was in, and to be quite honest, I'm totally fine with Koulibaly in there. My whole thing for him is when he's surrounded by Sosa, Kalajic, et cetera, we've talked about this a bunch of times that he seems to play well because everybody's focusing on those other players. And so I didn't think he played poorly. I thought he played well, and I thought he should have been in there. So I was totally okay with that, with him being in there. But yeah, the one that was kind of interesting to me wasn't necessarily who was playing as much as who was not on the bench. And that was, once again, Mark Oliver Kemp is kind of becoming an albatross for this team, a dead weight. And they, from what I have read, they want him to leave, because if he leaves during the transfer window, they at least get some money for him. If he doesn't leave during the transfer window, well, he's being outplayed by Ito. So does he even have a spot on the roster? And so it's just a bad, bad situation. So
yeah. And Ito scored this week. So
God, I hate you. So yeah. So let's jump into that. All right. So we go into the match and everything's kind of going okay. Both teams seem to be feeling themselves out a little bit. Let's talk about the big play that everybody was talking about. So Alexis Thibodeaux, for the second match in a row, heads down to the box, gets contact with the opposing player. And initially it looks like it's a penalty. The difference between this one and last week versus Leipzig is that the ref immediately calls for a penalty kick. It looks like this is going to be the momentum shift, the momentum change. A minute later, VAR intervenes. You are our expert on refereeing. You are the expert on our segment. Are you reffing kidding me? Let's get your thoughts on the initial call that was later reversed.
Well, so Tiffany comes down, and Kubler, who is the guy guarding him, Tiffany makes contact with Kubler. We have a saying at work that if you're driving down a street that isn't a two-way street and somebody's coming towards you, you pull over, you pull in your mirror, and you stop. That way, if the other vehicle makes contact with you, you're not at fault. And I say that to say that when you watch the play, Thibodeaux makes contact with Kubler, not the other way around. And so I thought that the ref would, or VAR got it reffing right.
I'm going to reach through this screen and punch you in the throat. I'm going to say that you're 100% wrong, and I'm going to cancel this segment for the rest of
his- Well, I'll say this. By the letter of the law, it's a penalty.
But then what are we talking about then?
But when you look at it and you see that Kubler stops and Thibodeaux runs into him, it's not a penalty. And that's why we love VAR, and that's why we have it.
Let me get this straight. So by the letter of the law, it's a penalty, but upon further review, it's not.
don't try to make sense of it.
I don't know. I do understand what you're saying, though. Thibodeaux maybe initiates the contact. So I understand what you're saying there. But Kubler put his foot in a bad position. And by putting his appendage in that position, he he directly caused Thibodeaux to fall down. I'll be 100% honest. Besides the fact I dislike you a lot, I didn't disagree 100% with the overturn. I think I tend to agree with you. I think what the problem is that he called the penalty. It was an immediate call. Everybody agreed with it. The Freiburg players agreed with it. The Stuttgart players agreed with it. Everybody was totally on board with it. And then it was one of those things that it kind of wish Jeff was here a little bit, but they kept looking at it and looking at it and looking at it. And that's where I'm confused. And I think a lot of Stuttgart supporters are confused, is what is the rule that gets VAR to actually intervene? Is it an obvious oversight? Is it a blatant mistake? Is it a ticky-tack foul? I mean, I guess that's the question. And I don't know enough to know. Whether, right.
But the reasoning seems to fluctuate from call to call. And right. If they had, again, a black and white reason, or this type of play goes to VAR, this type, if it's a penalty in the box, it automatically gets barred regardless.
Yeah.
Something like that, to where people can look at it and go, okay, maybe it's a foul, maybe it's not, but at least it's going to get looked at. We know that.
Right. And I think as a Stuttgart supporter, that's 2 weeks in a row. And to be quite honest, I think the non-call last week versus Leipzig was more egregious. It was even that one, they didn't even take it to VAR. That one against Leipzig seemed like a clear-cut push against Tibbetty again, and they didn't even give it a second glance.
Well, so they haven't yet.
Yeah, haven't. Maybe, right. Maybe 3 weeks from now, we'll head back and invite Leipzig back. But I think that's a disappointing thing is, in my mind, I can totally rationalize them not calling the penalty against Freiburg. But I can't, in back-to-back weeks, rationalize them not even looking at a similar situation, which in my mind was much more blatant versus Leipzig. And then they overturn what is probably a questionable call versus Freiburg. And I think that's the frustrating part for a supporter of Stuttgart, a club that's struggling. It was interesting in the post-game interviews, you know, Strike came out, and as you would expect, he's like, yeah, there's no way that's a penalty. Come on. And the Sven Mislintat came out and was like, if that's not a penalty, what is, you know, type of thing. So I think it goes back to what you said is what is the purpose of VAR? What exactly is the role of VAR? And I think that's where people are starting to get confused, because against Leipzig, I hate to keep saying it, but we're getting 0 points all over the place, and we need something to get the ball into the net so we can get some momentum going.
Well, a couple of things real quick about this whole penalty situation is, one, it wasn't conclusive enough to overturn the ref, in my opinion. The VAR got it right, it wasn't conclusive enough. There wasn't enough to say, hey, this should have been a penalty or this shouldn't have been a penalty. They just went with the ref's call because it wasn't conclusive enough. The other thing that I thought was bad from this was an opportunity for, as we've been saying for a couple of weeks, this was an opportunity for Kubali maybe to take this PK and get some, you know, get some confidence behind him. And that this would have been the perfect opportunity for that.
Yeah, it was interesting because Kalajic was actually the guy who was going to take it. He was the one lining up to take it. And I've never seen him take a penalty before. So I was kind of interested to see how that would have gone. But, you know, alas, it wasn't meant to be. And what made it obviously hurt all the much more is that, what, a minute later, Freiburg marches down the pitch and a deflection off Hikori Ito goes into the net, 1-0. I mean, your thoughts on that goal?
Yeah, you know, Holler gets it in the box. He passes it back to Hoffler. Hoffler takes a strike, and it might have went in. Who knows? Mueller looked like he was in position to stop it.
Yeah.
And Ito just gets his foot on it and deflects it into the goal, which is unfortunate. And what makes it more unfortunate, as you just said, is it came right after this, you know, unfortunate no PK call on the other side.
I think that was the key, is Hikori Ito tried to deflect the ball, unfortunately deflected it into the net, and coming right after the penalty kick that wasn't given. It's a young team, and things like that
just snowball.
Yeah, and especially when there's been lack of success. And this is now 5 games in a row where they didn't score. So the match goes on. Second half happens. And I didn't even know if it's worth mentioning, you know, that second goal. It was just a bad play. Anton in particular just didn't do his job. And as the official, or not the official, as the announcer was saying, Gary Preston, it's like his job, once he gets beat, he's got to take that player out. He's got to take him down. He's got to prevent that breakaway from happening. And Anton didn't. And that's what's frustrating, I think, is that everything that can go wrong is going wrong. No penalty kicks, deflected own goals, plays like that from a guy who's been relatively solid, you know, all year long.
Yeah, it's like Stuttgart's in some Murphy's Law dimension.
No, you're absolutely right. It's anything that can go wrong is going wrong. And I don't believe the DFB, the German Football Association, is against Stuttgart. I don't believe that at all. But it's just everything that can go wrong is going wrong. So the game, And I think what was so disappointing is, I didn't even have the stats up for this game, but I do remember I was looking at it a little bit yesterday, and coming off the Leipzig match, mm-hmm. where if not for Galachi, the Leipzig goalie, Stuttgart wins that match. He had probably the game of his season, mm-hmm. and he just made save after save. And you're like, okay, we're starting to figure it out. We're starting to put some threats on goal. And then you go into this match, I think they only had two shots.
Well, yeah, and that's what was part of the concerning part coming into this game, was that you guys played really well last week. And yeah. So to play like this, not that you guys played bad, it's just, you know, you had the lapses and unfortunately the bad call. And it's just, it from a Stuttgart perspective, it got to be frustrating. I will say that from a Freiburg standpoint, this Sade kid who scored the second goal.
Yeah.
In the Freiburg community that I'm a part of, we are so high on this kid. We have such high hopes for this kid. Mm-hmm. And it's just great. This was his third goal of the season. And it's great to see him. It's unfortunate that he scored the way he did off a defensive lapse. I mean, we'll take goal, any goal we can, but sure. But to see this kid just put a ball in the net, it from a Freiburg fan perspective, it was great to see.
No, and let's talk about that for a second, because it rubs some people the wrong way that Sven Mislintat was basically saying Freiburg is our role model. And let's not pretend that you and I know the history of Baden-Württemberg, the state in Germany where Stuttgart, Karlsruhe, Freiburg and Hoffenheim, among others, reside. But Stuttgart has always been the big boy of that area and is always one of the traditional clubs. And it rubbed a lot of people the wrong way when Stuttgart's upper management was saying, listen, Freiburg's the team we're looking at. They're the ones that figured it out. They know how to develop players. They know how to stay consistent. Even when they went down with Streich, they stayed with Streich, and now they're back up with Streich, and now they know what they're doing. And it was interesting how a lot of supporters were kind of like, wait a minute, here's what my take on this, and interesting on yours, is I think Sven Mislintat, who's in charge of, you know, player, getting players and scouting and stuff like that, I think he gets it. And this isn't the Stuttgart of 10 years ago, 15 years ago, 20 years ago. This is a new day and age. You see what the second league looks like with Schalke, Bremen, Hanover down there. And I think he gets that. Listen, Stuttgart's got great brand recognition. It's got an amazing name. It's an iconic club. But when all is said and done, the record is the record. We're one of the rawest, youngest, less goodest in the league. And we can't walk around pretending that we are Dortmund, that we're Bayern. We're not those clubs right now. And it's so difficult. And I kind of want to get your thoughts on that, as you guys are kind of seen as, with Hoffenheim, the kings of the area right now. Do you think it's fair for a club like Stuttgart to look up to you guys, or is that kind of a defeatist mentality?
No, I would agree with the Stuttgart fan. If my team's getting compared to Freiburg, I'm not happy about that, especially a team. And the reasoning for that is Freiburg is a team that knows who they are. We're the fact that we might make it into Europa League or Champions League this year is just mind blowing. But we know we're a mid-table team, lower mid-table team. That's who we are. So if you're comparing your team to our team, that's your management, that's your, you know, upper people saying that we're okay with being average. But Freiburg fans and Freiburg seem to be okay with that. That's who we are. That's our identity. We know that. That's what we, you know, expect. But other teams who have higher expectations, as Stuttgart should have after what they did last season, you know, hearing something like that, I'd be a little pissed too.
Yeah, I don't know how I feel about that, to be quite honest. It's I think what he's saying is absolutely correct, because if you look at the results over the last decade, facts are the facts. Stuttgart is a yo-yo team right now. And if we don't get some good luck and some good performances over the next month, we're going back down. And I hate to be so negative and pessimistic, but the only thing that is giving me hope is the dumpster fires that are everywhere else. Wolfsburg is a dumpster fire. Augsburg is a dumpster fire. Berlin, Hertha is a dumpster fire. So the only hope I have is that our dumpster fire is a little bit less than there right now.
Yeah.
So that's, I get what he's saying. I actually think it's refreshing. I understand why some people would be upset with that kind of comment. But I think that honestly has been the problem with this club over the last decade is we walk around like we're one of the big boys of and the facts just don't bear that out.
Yeah, it just seems like he's conceding to being average. And again, I would be upset if I was a Stuttgart fan.
I guess, but I don't know if you guys are average. You're one of the top nine teams, and that's actually
Freiburg is absolutely average, but the thing is, we're okay with that. We don't expect anything more than that, or at least I don't. But the people that I'm in contact with, making Europa League or something like that'd be mind blowing. That'd be great. But being 14th, finishing 15th, we're okay with that.
Yeah, I don't know though. I think maybe what Sven Mislintat is trying to say is that's the progress you have to make. Is you start off with surviving, you start off with, then you go to mid table, then you can start to make leaps and bounds depending on what you have. So it's a difficult time to for Stuttgart for sure. That's 1 point in the last three matches. They have not scored a goal in the last five matches. We've got the international break coming up. So let's wrap this up with your.
Can I ask you a question real quick?
Well, let's wrap this up.
But yeah. Well, that's why I'm going to ask the question. So you've been pretty hard on the substitutions the last couple weeks or so. What do you think about them in this game? Did you see an improvement?
I will say this. I'm glad that we usually wait 24 hours before we ever record because, as you know, I get pretty fired up on match day and I was very disappointed. And the way the club looked, I have to be very careful. I say this because anytime that you're critical of Pellegrino Matarazzo, it comes off as you want him fired. And I do not. I'll say that for the record. I do not. Mm-hmm. I do think it is fair. Like many Stuttgart supporters are starting to consider being constructively critical of what's happening. The fact is the results haven't been good. And the fact is, if this were any other club, I don't know if Pellegrino Matarazzo is still the coach of this team.
Oh yeah. There's like 10 or 12 clubs in the league right now that he would not be on any longer.
Right. So I think there's questions about his substitution patterns. I was screaming at the television for Egloff, Silas, Baez in particular to come into the match much, much sooner than they did. So I think there's a lot to question about substitution patterns. I think at this point, there's a lot to question about the structure of the 3-5-2, 3-5-1-1, whatever the system is that we play. I think everything is under the microscope right now, to be quite honest. But here's where I won't go crazy like I have in the past. Is as Matt, who's often on the podcast, says, okay, if you do make a move, then who do you replace him with? And right, it's exactly who do you bring in who's going to right the ship? And I'm not even at that point. I don't want Matarazzo sacked. That's not where I'm at. But I think it's fair to be frustrated with the results on the pitch, the results going into substitution patterns, and the results. It's fair to start asking questions, but this is where it gets difficult. And this is where we'll kind of wrap it up a little bit is this team needs every bit of hope and support it can have to survive. Is calling out Matarazzo, particular players helpful? Does that actually help the end goal? Of getting to where we need to get. There's a scene in the movie Cinderella Man, a Russell Crowe movie years ago, where he's sitting down at a pub with another character. And the other character's like, it's during the Great Depression. And he's saying, the other character is frustrated. He lost his job, his money, his house, everything. He's like, we've got to organize. We've got to fight back. And Jimmy Braddock, the main character in the movie, is like, well, what are we going to fight back against? Bad luck. You can't punch bad luck. And I think at the end of the day, as much as I question some of the things that are happening with the strategy, the tactics, the patterns of substitution, this team has just been hit with a ridiculous amount of bad luck, mm-hmm. from injuries to COVID to calls, and making a drastic change at this point, it's I don't see the point of it. You know, these are our guys. I will say this, and this is a topic I think for another day, is if I knew for 100% certainty that if this team gets relegated, which is not looking good right now, that they would keep Matarazzo and Mislintat together as a pair, I would say yes, ride this out 100%. Mm-hmm. If this was a Freiburg situation where come hell or high water, mm-hmm. relegation or safety, we're sticking with Strike,
right,
then sign me up. I'm all in.
Yeah, I mean, that's what Freiburg did. Absolutely.
Right. My fear is Stuttgart is a club that is very chaotic at times, that if the worst scenario happens, we unload everything. At that point, then you're like, well, what are we doing? So right. I think there's a lot of negativity here. There's a lot of things that, you know, it was a rough match. It's been a rough match, rough month, I should say. So there's a lot of questioning going on, but hopefully we go after the international break. We come back. Frankfurt is the team that is next up on the scoreboard. They're reeling mm-hmm. a little bit. So hopefully we can take advantage of that, get a point or two. And Augsburg, Wolfsburg, and Hertha, I'll continue to do what they're doing. And you know, we can get a couple points here or there. And
all these garbage, these dumpster fires could turn into a bonfire. And you guys could all just sit around and talk to each other. Have a little.
They relegate six teams instead of this year. That's probably how it's going to go. All right, awesome. We had kind of a bit of a cathartic, you know, talk here. This is one of our more unorganized part ones where we went through the match. Here, how about this? Let's do this. We'll wrap it up here. Give me your thoughts on how Freiburg is going to go the next few matches, and then give me your thoughts on Stuttgart as the season goes on. Go.
Well, look, again, I think Freiburg's going to, you know, just stay steady. Let's see, what are their next matches? We got Freiburg has Cologne next week. So, I mean, 3 points. Am I right? But I think we're going to stay steady. I think that, you know, we play them and then we play Mainz after that at home. So I think we're going to be all right. Again, I think a Strike is going to have us, you know, just playing steady, and we're not going to do too much to change the lineup or anything of that nature. And we're just going to chug along and be where we are right now.
Well, where you are right now is in a great spot, Oz. It's rough to lose that match. It's rough to lose our wager. I know you kid. But if there's one club, you know, in the Bundesliga that's hard not to root for, it's Freiburg. It's hard that one of the most unlikable people around you is a supporter of them. So that obviously makes it tough. Last thoughts. How do you think Stuttgart's going to look the next month?
Okay. So here you got. Who you got playing next week? You're playing Frankfurt and then Leverkusen.
We got Frankfurt, Leverkusen. Yeah.
And then you got Bochum after that.
Big match.
I hate to stay negative on the show, but you know, if you get 1 to 3 points out of that next three games, I'd be surprised.
Oh, wow! What a downer.
Well, you're welcome.
Yeah, I know. This is why we never have you on the podcast anymore. Oh, all right, Austin. Well, thanks for that.
I do think bringing back the gel. I think maybe next week or the next game is where you guys gel together. Advertisement here.
Yeah, see if we can get some hair gel. We'll see our Rust-Oleum sponsorship isn't working out too well right now. We'll have to see how that goes. But all right, Oz. Well, thanks so much for joining us. Actually, no. Thanks for nothing.
Thanks for having me on.
All right, welcome back to part two. Austin, thanks for the breakdown of the match, even though he pretty much thanks for being relegated for the rest of the season. So Matt, who's joining me now, I don't know if we're going to have Austin back on the podcast anytime soon. What do you think of that?
I'm not sure I would. I don't think he's up to Rust-Oleum standards.
Rust-Oleum, yeah, that only lasted a week too, didn't it? I don't think we're up to their standards at all. Rust-Oleum, a fine product.
A perfect product. And I think they just saw just how rusty Sasha Kalajic still is and went, even for us, that's a little rough.
They're backing away very slowly from involvement with us at all, I think. Well, why don't, Matt, thanks for joining me. Austin was kind of the positive guy in the first part of this podcast. And I think you and I are going to take this podcast where it really needs to go in the second part of it. As the only question we got this week was from Ted down in Cincinnati. Ted basically asked, how much room is on the ledge for people to join us as things are looking pretty bleak right now. So I thought we would just kind of go over some random items that are in the news as we're on the international break here going forward. So what do you think? We just hit up some random storylines.
Let's do it.
All right. So first off, the news is official, Matt, that Mark Oliver Kempf is leaving. He has just signed a deal with Hertha Berlin until 2026. So Hertha Berlin, be ready for him to walk away in 2026, and you're not going to get much for him. So the news is that Stuttgart got about 500,000 euros for him. Matt, what are your thoughts on the news that Mark Oliver is no longer on the squad?
Meh. I mean, we've talked about Kempf a while, and I love a Kempf thunderheader, but he's been a negative. He's been a non-entity on the field, so who cares? He doesn't seem to be a positive influence on anybody off the field. He was surpassed by Ito, who wasn't supposed to see action outside of the fourth division of German soccer this year,
right.
And is playing remarkably well. So. And we knew he was going to leave at the end of the year. So the fact that Sven got 500K for him when Hertha could have waited a couple months and paid nothing for him, I call that a pretty big win.
Yeah, I'm only concerned because when we did our predictions for how the second half of the season was going to look, I predicted that Mark Oliver Kempf would be the difference maker for the team. So now I'm really concerned that when we play up against them in the future, we will see a thunderheader. Just not the one we wanted to see. So I tend to agree with you. Good riddance. We've been pretty critical of Mark Oliver Kempf. The thing that I've said it before, the thing that I find really odd is he was a captain at one point, and then he lost his captaincy, and then he lost his starting position. And you're like, that's a pretty quick, and that didn't happen over a matter of years. It was a pretty quick fall from grace for him. I did find somebody wrote on, I wish I could give them credit for this, Reddit or Twitter, about how quiet the team is with no Gregor Kobel and no Mark Oliver Kempf. And I really didn't think that Kempf was that vocal of a leader, but perhaps he was back there. He was one of the veterans of the squad. So maybe we will miss him going forward. I tend to agree with you though, is if Ito's already taken his spot, what's the point, I guess?
Yeah.
I wonder where he'll go next, because you know he's going to go somewhere after 2026.
Yeah, he'll hang out there for a little while, and then he'll get disgruntled and pitch a fit and be on the sideline for a little while. And then who knows, maybe we'll see him in MLS and he can go play in Cincinnati and Teddy can go watch him there.
He may be heading that way. Speaking of other players, there's a rumor that Borna Sosa is being linked to Chelsea for £25 million, as they call it. What do you think of that?
That's a really tough one, because Sosa's awesome. Sosa and Sasa, are at least last year, were the key to any offensive attack that we had, and everything else that we did was based off of the fact that people were scared of that link up. So losing Sosa would really suck, but also $25 million is a lot of money.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that comes out to almost what, 30 million euro or so. I mean, it's the thing that I've heard is that Stuttgart isn't listening to anything under that that amount. But boy, oh boy, losing him right now when we can't do anything, I would not be a huge a huge fan of that. I get that we're broke and 30 million euros, 30 million euro, but we haven't scored a goal in what, a year,
basically. Yeah. It would mean that leadership on the team feels like Silas is really close to being back, and that a combo of Silas and Furic on the wings, they feel can make up for a loss of Sosa, which, you know, in theory they could. It's a different thing. Neither of those guys are putting in those beautiful pinpoint crosses that Sosa does.
Right.
But there's other ways that they can utilize that. And Kalajic seems to be fairly flexible in that he's not late career Mario Gomez, where he's got to have a pinpoint cross to head in.
Yeah.
And he's got skills with his feet.
I think if they made that move, they would have to do a hard sell to the supporters. I think if you sell Sosa at this point, with as much as the team is struggling and currently in 17th place, I don't know how you can get in front of that and spin that as a positive. I think that's a message, whether inherent or not, that we're going down and we need the money to protect ourselves once we go down. And I agree with you. They could probably think, well, Silas is coming back and Furic can play some form of that role. But I don't know. I would not want to be the Stuttgart PR guy, because I don't know how you sell that.
I don't love the move, but that I could see how they could rationalize it and like how I could explain myself into it. But it, especially with the way that we're struggling and the fact that we cannot score at all ever, removing one of your best offensive weapons seems like, you know, putting your own gun in your mouth.
Yeah, so hopefully that is just a rumor. I also heard that the rumor just broke out that Bayern is looking at Dino Mavropanos. So that's this is the year that we were relegated with Benjamin Pavard. As things started to circle out of down the drain and things are going out of control, you started to hear all these reports of the teams that were looking at the carcass that was Stuttgart and what they could pick off of us. And I'm having PTSD now about the Bayerns and the Dortmunds and all these teams looking at the talent that this team clearly has and going, okay, licking their chops. And then Stuttgart's got to get in front of this, because if we do get relegated, you get, I don't want to say pennies on the dollar for some of these guys, but you don't get what you could get when you're still in the top tier. So I'm just having some PTSD on all these big clubs circling around. And if Sosa's gone and then Dino's gone, I mean, oh.
I feel like of the two of them, if we had to sell one, I'd prefer they sell Sosa, because we have other options in attack. It's not like for like, but we have other options. Our defense right now is so thin, and especially with Kempf being a toddler and now getting sold out, if we lost Mavropanos too, your entire defense then is hinging on Hiroki Ito, who I'm a huge fan of, really, really like watching that guy. I feel like he's doing a fantastic job, but he's a brand new Bundesliga player who we keep saying it was not expected to be in the league this year. And who else do we have back there? Like Stenzel, Carazor, I guess, but yeah. Carazor is more of a defensive mid. That's just,
yeah. I think the good news, but a set of a bright light on this positive light, is that if Dino was to be pursued by Bayern, it wouldn't be until this summer. I guess Bayern has some defensive players who are not going to renew their contracts, or they're going to move on from. So it would be a summer situation rather than during the year. So I guess there's that. But yeah, I'm with you. I hope they keep the squad together, because that's the only thing that we've really been able to hold our heads on, is the idea that once the team gets back, once the team gets healthy, we'll start to see some results. So selling some of your key components just would seem to go fly in the face of all the things that we've kind of hoped for over the course of the last few weeks and months.
Yeah, I feel like they've gotten to a spot too where they're not going to sell if there isn't a good plan in place. This isn't a reactionary panic leadership group.
Well, it'll be interesting to see what happens over the next few weeks of the transfer window. We all knew Mark Oliver Kempf was on his way out, and there's been rumors about Sosa all year, so that shouldn't really shock too many of us. Let's move on to the news. The team is doing the dreaded the dreaded vacation trip to Spain to try to rally the troops and get some fitness in. And again, PTSD, I remember when they did this with Crammy over the 1 year, trying to rally the troops and get the team together. Let me throw some quotes at you from Pellegrino Matarazzo about what they're hoping to achieve during this trip. And you tell me which one you think is the most important. So Pellegrino said, okay, one, it's important for us to use this time to get a little fitter. Two, he's considering a new structure or new process in terms of tactics going forward. And then three was the idea of coming together as a community and getting back together kind of as a group of a team and friends and things like that. And I believe the fourth thing is he said they haven't had a chance to have a beer together. So which of those four things do you think are key to the team having success once they return from Spain?
All of the above.
You only get one.
Having a beer then. This is and I'm being a little facetious, but this is a group that, you know, we've talked about a little bit in the past that it's kind of remarkable that Matarazzo has been able to keep this group from self-destructing given all the challenges they've had. And it's starting to feel a little bit like we're on the verge of that and we're getting some guys back. And right now is the time when we need to rally and not collapse in. So if sitting everybody down and having a few beers and talking out some strategy and some tactics and getting the guys pumped and excited, if we can do that and maybe they come back, like they look dog tired and just borderline disinterested in the last game once they went down the first goal. So some of that stuff you can fix by just like, let's all have a couple drinks, sit around a campfire and bond as teammates.
I'm going to agree with you 100% on that. I think the team is getting fitter. I think that's just a natural process of guys coming back. I think many of us have been critical of Pellegrino Matarazzo over the last couple of weeks because of the results and all that stuff. Very few people are calling for anything very drastic, but there has been some criticism. So I can understand looking at the tactics, but I 100% agree with you is that the thing that makes this club so special, at least over the last year and a half, has been the culture that they've had and how excited they are for each other when guys score. And we've talked about Sven Mislintat going nuts on the bench when they get a goal, or how Pellegrino is hugging different players like Forster or whoever the case may be, or how when Silas finally came back, how everybody was so on board with that stuff. When Kalajic joking with Sosa during an interview about, you know, that goal that Sosa scored, about how it wasn't on purpose. So, but I agree with you. I think you can sense some cracks in that taking place, whether it's Pellegrino being a little bit more critical of the players in public. Kalajic looks incredibly frustrated right now. I think there was a report about how he's basically bearing the brunt of this team's success and how that might be getting to him. To me, I don't know if you noticed that after the match, Dino Mavropanos basically tore his jersey off and essentially stormed off the pitch. I think sitting down, doing some kumbaya stuff isn't going to solve everything. But if this team is going to get to where we're hoping they're going to get, then they need to be on the same page. And I think shipping Kemp out of here is one step towards that process. And I think them going to Spain and just being together and getting on the same page is another part of that process. Cause I think we all agree the talent is there. It's just putting it together a little bit. And sometimes it's those little intangibles that make the difference. And hopefully having a dingle locker is a good way to do that. So I'm on board with you there.
Fingers crossed that he's able to pull some magic and we see it work. Cause we saw last year, this was, you know, roughly the same roster we have this year. Not really any superstars, but some guys that just went out and played hard and played for each other and got it done.
Right. So hopefully get a little bit of that bonding, a little bit of that camaraderie, a little bit of that communication, get some guys fit. Although news just broke that Nardi hurt his knee on the first day of the camp. And I don't know what the diagnosis of that is, but more beer, please. I think that's the only thing that's going to get most of us through this. Why don't, you know, as we talk about Nardi, why don't we talk about some of the players just really quick? We don't have to do a full roster analysis here, maybe instead of focusing on the negative there, why don't we focus a little bit on the positive? And we got Frankfurt coming up, and we're not going to dive into that match really because it's in a couple of weeks. But what would your dream lineup be? Or are there any players that you would like to see in the lineup who really maybe haven't played much go up against Frankfurt?
That's hard because it's like there's a part of me that wants to just scrap the whole lineup because they've been playing so bad. But then you look at the bench about who could replace them, and it's like, yeah, it's pretty thin back there.
Yeah.
I wouldn't mind seeing Lilian Egloff get some time just because we haven't seen him. Mm-hmm. I'm a huge Mangala fan, but Mangala the last game was completely invisible.
Right.
So I don't know if he just needs a break or he needs one of the proverbial watch from the press box and see if you can learn something matches to help him get his head back in. I don't know who's piquing your interest, Travis.
Lilian Egloff, because not that I know anything about him, but Stuttgart fans in the know love this kid and they want him to play tomorrow, yesterday, whatever the case may be. And I'm not gonna pretend I know anything about him other than he's very injury prone and he struggled through a number of setbacks in that regard. The guy that I really want to see, there's two of them, but I think COVID has really taken a lot of the season out of Wahid Fahir, the Dutch player that they picked up. I really wanted to see him. He seems out of it a bit, but I want to see more Omer Baez, that the kid from Turkey. He's now eligible to play as he turned 18. That's a kid I'm really excited to see. And against Furt, he looked really good. And I'm just kind of surprised he hasn't gotten much playing time. And I think maybe that's where a lot of the root of my criticisms towards Matarazzo are, is the kid does come on towards the end of the game, but it's always, like you say, 10 minutes too late or whatever the case is.
Yeah.
I don't know if he's ready for prime time, but if he was the top Turkish youth talent in the entire country and the entire continent, so that Stuttgart got a steal when they got this kid, I want to see him.
Yeah, him, Baez, Fagir, and Egloff would be great to see just because they're three of the guys who have a lot of promise who haven't gotten a lot of time. And the guys who have gotten time aren't getting it done, so let's try something a little different.
You feel bad criticizing a player like Klimowitz, who's got so much talent. And I don't know if you know this, whose father played a little bit in the Bundesliga. You may have.
What's this?
Yeah, we'll cover it in later. I'll tell you off the air.
Some deep dive research you've done.
Roberto Massimo is kind of in a valley right now, so he needs a bit of a break. But I agree with you. Some of the guys on the pitch just aren't getting it done. Part of me just wants to say, put out the lineup that we've all hoped would be there. And Silas on one side, Sosa on the other, Kalajic up top, Magala, Endo, and just call it a day. But I do think the little bit I've seen of Baez I like. So I'd like to see some more of him out there.
I'd really like to see Silas start. And if he's gassed after 45 minutes, okay, fine. Then, put Baez or Fagir in that spot and give them the second half of the game. But maybe he can go 60 and feel okay. Maybe he can go 70 or 80. Like, we're not going to find out until he gets a shot at doing it.
I 100% agree. I'd rather see him the front 60 than the last 20.
Yes.
Because he should go in at the 60-minute mark, but then Pellegrino, I think, forgets and puts him in at the 70-minute mark. You're like, what are you doing there? Some of those guys, I think it seems like the first 15, 20 minutes of any match is a kind of feeling out process.
Yeah.
So you would hope that Silas is able to kind of work his way in. And then if his fitness isn't where it needs to be, I agree. 60-minute mark, wherever the case may be. So dream lineup. Hopefully we see some of the youth kids. Hopefully see some of those guys coming back from COVID or injury and all that stuff. And speaking of COVID, it just came out that a number of the states in Germany are kind of changing the way that they're going to allow fans into the stands. And the new one of the new signings for Stuttgart who's coming over in the summer once the season is over, Alexander Werl, was mentioning, and he'll be in charge of finances, and he works for Cologne right now. And he's just like, who invented or created the system that now exists as to how many fans can be in the stands? And he went through a number of the different states and how some states allow zero, like Rhineland, and some like Bavaria allow up to 10,000. And a club like Stuttgart that is so that needs that cash infusion of fans to show up, I believe as of this recording, it's 750 or 500. It's somewhere in that number of fans that can actually show up. Any thoughts on that? I mean, I know we're not Corona experts. We're definitely not experts on this topic, but it just seems odd to me that in one area, it can be 10,000, and another area, it can be 500.
Yeah, and it's, you know, we're seeing this stateside too, where some of this doesn't make any sense. Michigan State University announced after the holiday break that they were going to go to all virtual classes for a couple weeks because of spike in cases in the state of Michigan, and East Lansing in particular is what got hit really hard once all the students came back. And at the same time, they're allowing full capacity to their basketball games, which doesn't, you know, that's an indoor stadium. That doesn't make a lot of sense to me.
Right.
And I'm not just picking on Michigan State either. There's other, it's just the first one that came to mind. I get having some fans there, especially these are outdoor arenas. You know, there's presumably airflow. There's an American soccer writer, Grant Wall. His wife is I think she's an epidemiologist, but she's been all over like CNN and stuff lately talking about COVID stuff. And he sent her a picture of the Miami FC opening game because they had their first season last year and said, what are your thoughts on this? Because this home fan section was shoulder to shoulder.
Okay.
She said, they're looking at the way the flags are waving, there's a cross breeze, they're probably fine in the stands. The issue is going to be when they go in and out of the tunnels to and from the stands and on the concourse, and then in the bathroom where there's not that airflow. So the thing, there is a point to all this. The thing that really gets me with watching any of the German games in the places where they are allowing people, it's like they've opened one section of the stadium. So it's, we're only allowing 5,000 people, but we're putting them in these 5,000 seats that are all right on top of each other. Great, restrict it to 10,000, but then spread them out throughout the stadium. You know, that way at least you've got distancing, require masks, require proofs of vaccination. I feel like there are ways to have, if not full stadiums, have some fans in attendance without risking becoming a super spreader event.
Yeah, definitely don't want to. Like I said, we don't know the health issue in situations like that, but it does seem like you said, Brian, that we're going to allow X amount of fans, but you're all going to sit right next to each other for this. And I guess my point is from a selfish perspective, Stuttgart is a club that needs money, and this is a way to get money. And if it's outside and it's spread out, that's maybe a healthy way to do it. And then from a selfish perspective, I've kind of come around on the idea that this team needs the supporters in the stands to have success. And I know that is a totally selfish, one-dimensional, you're not looking at the health issues of the pandemic. I get it. It's frustrating that one state, that Bavaria, that probably doesn't need 10,000 fans in the stands can have it. And then you've got a club that is struggling that can't. So there's a bit of an equity issue there that I think, unless COVID doesn't like Bavaria, and it's just like, well, we'll hang out in Southwest Germany instead.
I mean, nobody likes Bayern Munich, so it's possible that
we found the cure. It's not a vaccine, it's a Bayern jersey. Take that, Munich. We stick it to you. Well, actually, speaking of money, so Matt, this just came out that Stuttgart has been looking for a big time investor to help out with the finances and all that stuff. And they got an investor. Unfortunately, it wasn't a big time investor. So is it Jaco or Jaco? Do you know how this is pronounced? The outfit who takes care of the kids for the team?
I think it's a long A. I think it's Jaco.
Oh, so it's neither.
Yeah. Basically, Travis, the answer is you're wrong.
Well, Austin's in charge of pronunciation, not me, my friend. So, well, Jaco, their word is it's pretty confirmed they're going to take a 1% ownership stake of the club, or to take over 1% of the shares, which will be about $4 million. I think it's about $20 million they're going to pay up front, and they're going to be the team supplier for the next 6 or 7 years. So the contract is written there. Turns out that Jaco is only 90 minutes away from Stuttgart. So they're in the same area. And sporting director Jochen Rotgermann totally well nailed that for Stuttgart, said, we'd rather be the number one with a manufacturer than dance in the second row with a large competitor.
Ooh, shots fired.
Yeah, I love the German language, by the way. I think I know what he's saying. I think he's saying, hey, Puma, it was fun, but we're not going to be with you. So we've got that money. So it's not the huge investor we were hoping for, but it's a local one. And what do you think of this? So I looked up Jocko online, and they supply uniforms for, they claim, 100,000 clubs in professional and amateur sports, and mostly, quote, lower class football clubs, end quote.
Ooh.
So, yay.
Well, first of all, we need to hire a PR person for Jocko, because you don't want to advertise yourself as being low class. Come on. And I get the point that the Stuttgart staffer made about wanting to be the big dog with your supplier. I get that. And I think there's a lot of sense to that. And as long as the players aren't complaining that like Jocko socks are too tight and they have to cut them apart so their calves can breathe.
Omar Marmouche.
Boom. You know, they're all wearing whatever cleats they want. So, you know, who cares? That if Jocko will open a US store and sell Stuttgart gear without us having to pay exorbitant shipping fees and wait 7 years for anything to arrive, I am on board and I will start ordering tomorrow.
It is about 33 euro to ship anything from Stuttgart to here. And the good thing though is, if you listen to this podcast at all, you know we've had shipping issues from the Stuttgart store. But the good thing is Stuttgart was ahead of the supply chain issue. They've had supply chain issues for years. So this is nothing new to them.
Trendsetters.
Let me ask you that. All right. Are you a fan of the Jocko kits that have come out over there since they've been associated with the club?
I feel like they've been pretty good recently. I haven't bought any, but the only thing that's really preventing me from buying it is, A, they're like $60 or $70 US. Mm-hmm. And then you've got to tack on that, you know, 30 euro shipping fee. And so if you're going to order, like, you want to order enough stuff to make that shipping fee worth it. Mm-hmm. And I just, I'm too Schwaben at my core. I'm too cheap to do it.
You know, maybe this is, you buy one kit and then you get some fine Rust-Oleum product.
Hey, and
change it all the time.
I love that idea.
Rust-Oleum, the new kit sponsor for Matt. I think they've actually done a pretty good job. The diversity kit they came up with last year was awesome.
No question.
Fantastic. And then they came up, I think, the same year with the black and red kit that had the street.
Yes.
Signs.
Loved that one.
So those are two great ones. The white home kits to me have been the letdown. I know it's hard to do much with a white shirt and a red stripe. Those have been a bit of a letdown to me. The away kits have looked sharp though, I think. So I'm pretty on board with those.
I feel like based on what I see on Twitter and Reddit, I'm in the minority here, but I like what they did with this year's home kit. Mm. I like the black accents on either side of the brewstring. I don't mind the Mercedes logo being in the middle. I think they look sharp.
I think what I like most about Jocko is that it is more of a less athletic cut, so that now as I've entered my golden years and my body is starting to be shaped like a pear, I can wear a Jocko kit and still consider myself athletic, whereas with the Adidas and the Puma kits, I really have to hold my stomach in all day long, and that's not healthy.
Yeah, I think we should all lobby for a dad bod cut soccer kit, because I'm a large human being, and you know, I got a couple XLs that, oh boy, I'm not wearing them out in public right now.
What was one year that we all decided to order together and we messed up the sizes? And I remember I shipped you and Rob in particular, a large whatever it was, and he was like, I'm gonna give this to my dog now, it's so small.
Well, I have the very first Stuttgart kit I ever got was a Puma kit, and a friend of mine who's from Vonweil, just outside of Stuttgart, her sister was working for a company that Puma had contracted on something, So she got her sister to have a jersey custom made for me with my name on the back of it. Ooh. And it's a medium. And I'm, for the listener, I stand 6 feet, 4 inches tall, and I'm about 230 pounds. And if I put a medium on, it looks like a cartoon drawing that somebody made of a fat guy in a sausage casing. Like, my 8-year-old wears it to school and thinks it's pretty cool.
Fair enough. See, there you go. I'm just kind of, I want to almost be quiet so the listener, singular, I saw what you did there, by the way, is to just take a moment to take that all in visually. Because Matt, you and I have the perfect face for radio, my friend.
Yeah.
Oh, man. Well, I think we fat shamed Rob, so it's time to move on to some new stuff. All right, listen, we started this segment talking about how can we help talk Ted off the ledge? And I think we've done a really poor job of that. So let's wrap up with a positive here. Matt, I just saw this news come out that the newspaper Express reported that Stuttgart is in second place on the table.
Love it.
Wait, see, this is positive, Ted. Second place on the table when it comes to insulting tweets on Twitter aimed towards the club. So, 36,000 tweets, over 2,000 of them were insulting to poor Stuttgart. First place, any guesses?
Is it Bayern because their fans are always just mad about something?
No, it's FC Cologne is in first place.
How about that?
I wouldn't have seen that. Gladbach is in third place, and I'm not sure what everybody else is, because once you're outside the top three, I just, you know, who cares? So we're
are the Köln fans, like, did the new Hennis do something they're unhappy with? Is he defecating on the field when we're not paying attention?
I don't know, but I would be really careful what you say about Hennis, because
Steph going to come for me.
Yeah. You got to be careful, though. They love their Hennis. So the number one words that were used, bad was used 20%, mistakes 13%, ass 7%, stupid 6%, pathetic 4%, and son of a biscuit was used 1%. So congratulations to Stuttgart. You are leading the table. And I think if the season continues the way it's going, watch out, Cologne. We're coming for you.
So since the effort here is to be positive, let me try and put a positive spin on this.
Okay.
It shows that the fans are still engaged, mm-hmm. that we haven't checked out, that we are still invested and still interested and still engaging, albeit in fruitless flame wars on Twitter. but we're still there. We haven't written the team off yet.
Isn't that important? It's like what they say is, apathy is worse than anger at this point. So we're certainly not apathetic about the club. So we've got that going for it. So hopefully, Ted, we have talked you off the ledge, or we have just made the ledge a little bit bigger so you can grab a space here and sit with us. Matt, our next match is against Frankfurt after the break. Real quick, we'll wrap it up here, but any thoughts on that match coming up?
Frankfurt's on a bit of a skid right now. See, they've got a loss, a draw, and a loss in their last three. They've got an even goal differential. Feels like a team that we could surprise out of the gate if we can get our act together. I was thinking a little more about Silas starting, like during, and you mentioned the feeling out period. I feel like you get a little bit of that in a macro sense too. Whenever you come off a break, teams usually come out a little hesitant. Mm-hmm. And that feels like a time that's ripe for Silas to use his speed and ball skills to punish a team that's trying to ease their way into a game. So maybe he'll be ready and we can surprise strike. I think if we don't do something in that game early in the first half, that it might be another bad Saturday morning for us.
Yeah, I think the key, like you said, is to have an early positive start in that one, because Frankfurt, I was really surprised that they lost to Bielefeld, especially considering they had Kostic back and their starting goalkeeper back. And Kostic is kind of the engine that runs that team. And
yeah,
they got beat up pretty good. So hopefully that, they're reeling a little bit. We can take advantage of that a little bit. We can get on the winning track a little bit, and then we can maybe get higher up on the table than our insult meter is here. So we'll
see. Just need a little momentum.
That's right. One way or the other, we're going to leave the table. All right, Matt. Hey, thanks so much for joining us this week. Enjoy your off weekend. No, Valvi. And then, hey, have fun watching the Packers in the Oh. Too soon?
No, it was coming. The team had a lot of holes. I'm on the Bengals train right now. Just not ditching my Packers for Cincinnati, but the Bengals have been fun to watch. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And ever since I was a little kid, I thought those tiger stripe helmets were cool. And I know some Bengals fans who are absolutely losing their minds right now. And it is hilarious to watch them freak out every week. So
yeah,
go Bengals. I won't have the Packers or Stuttgart to depress me this weekend. I'll have to find something else to bring me down.
Right. So Ted, there you go. You're a Bengals fan. And just think, Matt and Travis are sending some positive vibes your way. Sorry about that, Ted.
We're sorry.
Already in advance. All right, Matt. Thanks a lot. We'll talk to you next time.
Thanks, Travis. See you later.